Welcome to Growth Marketing Today, where marketers, designers, and product owners level up their growth marketing chops from experts in today's top startups. Here's your host, Ramley John.
Hey y'all, it's Ramley John, and I'm trying out something new to introduce myself today. Welcome to episode 108 of Growth Marketing Today. Now today we're going to be talking about content distribution and how to 10x that to get millions of eyeballs on that amazing content that you've just created. Now you can create the best content with the best imagery, quotes from expert, and include hard to find statistics. You can even optimize for search engines, but it won't matter and it won't reach a bigger audience if you don't invest in distributing that remarkable content. So in this episode, I got Ross Simmons, the founder of Foundation Marketing, a content marketing agency that combines data and creativity to develop and serve ambitious brands. He shares his in-depth tactics and strategies on how to 10x content distribution for himself and his clients to get millions of eyeballs on their content. You can copy this step-by-step process and do the same for your company. Think about that. I'm excited about this episode. In episode 108, this episode, you'll learn first, Ross Sherlock Homeboy content strategy. Yeah, I didn't make that up. That was sis. I kept laughing when I heard that. Second, how does Ross deal with trolls online? Come on, there's trolls online. What do you do? And third, what are the distribution channels that Ross is excited about in 2020 and beyond? Now, before I jump in, and I've always said this, I have created a free growth cheat sheet with all the lessons, insights, step-by-step process from this episode in a one-page PDF. Seriously, why take notes when you can just steal mine? You can take all the insights and lessons from Ross in this one-page PDF, apply it to your business, and accelerate the growth of your company faster. You can go to growthtoday.fm/108 to download this now or find that link in the description. And this won't be up forever. When I publish the next episode next week, I'm going to take away this week's episode's cheat sheet. So make sure to download it before that happens. You wouldn't want to miss on this week's episode's cheat sheet. I also want to thank those who made this episode possible. Now, these folks help cover the cost of hosting and marketing tools so I can focus on getting amazing expert like Ross on this show. Before we start, this episode is brought to you by productled.com. Now, product-led growth is disrupting the way businesses are selling software. It's how companies like Slack, Zoom, Dropbox, and HubSpot have become juggernauts in their industries. Become product Product-led growth certified in just 6 weeks. Learn more at productled.com/certification or find that link in the description. Well, enough about me. Let's jump in my chat with Ross. Hey, everybody. I'm excited to have Ross finally on this show. I've been following him on LinkedIn, on Twitter. I saw some of his talks on different places, and he's finally on the show. So how's it going, Ross?
It's good. I'm pumped to be here. Thanks for having me on. I'm excited to jump in and chat about some content. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, I think that content should jam. We're going to dig deep into content and content marketing and how often should you be creating content and content distribution. But before we do, I would like to hear your story first. I think that's like, you know, people get to know you. And yep. I'm curious how you got started with foundation marketing and content marketing in general.
For sure. So I've been in the world of content before content marketing or social media was even a thing. I started way back when I was in university with a fantasy football blog, creating content just because I loved football. I also started up a community about things like Madden and The Sims when I was in university. And I use that as kind of just a pastime and a hobby. And over time, as I started to create more content, I started to realize like, this is a thing that's going to last. The internet's not going anywhere. So I eventually shifted my blog, which was at the time about sports, to a blog about what I was learning in school, which was marketing. And in school, I wasn't learning much about digital marketing or social media marketing or anything. Professors were teaching more of the fundamentals and the traditional methods. So I started to do my own research and I started to create content about that. The traction started to take place where people started to read the content, people started to share it. I started to get new clients. I started to get people asking me if I'd provide services. And this is when I was about 22 years old and it kind of the light bulb went off that this is a career as well. So at that point, I kind of leaned into it. I doubled down. I got a gig with the CBC to implement the social media strategy for the Maritimes. I quit, started my own thing, then got brought into a bigger agency, joined that for about 2 years, quit again and start a foundation. And I've been doing that ever since. So it really just started with the core fundamental understanding and obsession with content and creating things. And all started with kind of that fantasy football and video game blog and obsession. And now it's a content marketing agency creating content for B2B brands around the world.
Cool, man. Cool. So, you know, really, we're going to talk about content. And, you know, content is so key in any kind of marketing. I think one of the biggest misconceptions I hear a lot is that, you know, you have to create a ton of content for people to find you. So that's, you know, I'm curious what your thoughts are that, you know, how much content should companies and brands be creating?
Yeah, I think it's a common debate and a common discussion around the value of content quality versus content quantity. And I think the best approach that any brand can take is to try to find a balance and a blend of both. You want to consistently be creating content, but you also want to consistently be creating good content. There's a old Chris Rock joke where, or it might be Chris Tucker, where he says essentially this idea, you don't get gifts or you don't get awards for kind of raising your kid. Like people always brag about, oh, I take care of my kids. But you're supposed to do that. You don't get roses for that. The same thing exists in content marketing. Marketers get so excited. Oh, I only create good content. I only write great content. You're supposed to. Like at a fundamental level, you're supposed to create good content. So the quality should never be a question. The question around quantity is a great one, but the fundamental requirement for any brand or anyone who's looking to get into the space needs to start with is figuring out what can you do with your time to actually create content. Like you have to start internally to look at your resourcing available, how much time can you invest, how much money can you spend, et cetera. And then you create as much content as you can possible. The next step is to also understand that not all content is created equal, right? Like, so certain types of content are going to have lower value long-term than other types of content. So you have to understand what type of content should you be developing and create that. If you can create a bunch of great, amazing content consistently day after day, then by all means do it. But some brands can't, some marketers can't, some teams can't. And in those recommendations, in those cases, I recommend that you try to create one individual asset that is extremely valuable to your audience. It will provide you with the ability to then repurpose that content as well. So rather than just trying to diversify your content portfolio with a bunch of different assets, you can take one individual asset. Let's say it's a white paper that is filled with insights, research, data, et cetera. You can take elements of that and you can turn it into multiple blog posts. You can take elements of that and turn it into an Instagram story. You can take elements of that and turn it into a webinar, into a LinkedIn update, to a Twitter thread, et cetera. That's what you have the ability to do. But if you do have essentially unlimited budget, you want to diversify your content marketing mix with as many pieces of content that you can create as possible and understand the goal of understanding the person on the other end of the keyboard and the buyer's journey that they would go through.
That, you said something that really stuck with me because I saw one of your talks about how to 10X your content. And you talked about remixing and repurposing. I noticed that you do the same. You know, you have a video, you snip it up, post it up on LinkedIn. What, do you have any other examples of maybe like a client or a company that you do that for where, you know, you take one of their pieces of content, you create it, and you're actually like, okay, let's use it for this other types of...
For sure. So we've done it tons of times in the SaaS world. I'll give you an example with kind of like one of our other brands that we run. We also run an e-commerce site called hustleandgrind.com. And with Hustle and Grind, we've written blog posts, and then we've turned those assets into a wide range of different assets. For example, we wrote one piece where it was the combination of coffee and hip-hop increases your productivity. And we essentially took two research studies, threw them together and wrote a blog post about it. It got tons of traction on social media. Celebrities were sharing it. People were loving it. It was great. We could have ended with that piece. We could have pressed publish and called it a day. But instead, we went into that mode of let's remix, repurpose this. So we created an Instagram story with that content. We created a carousel for Instagram where people could swipe through and start to read that same concept. We created a SlideShare presentation about it. We created a YouTube video about it. We also took that same post and then submitted it as a link to Reddit. And then rather than just doing that, we took all of the copy from that post and submitted it as a text post on Reddit. We did the same thing on Medium.com. We took that post and we submitted it to Medium.com and then submitted it as a guest blog post on a site called Elite Daily. So by doing this, we took one individual asset and we were able to reach multi-millions of people by, again, just creating it once and then repurposing it over and over again. The thing that we had that a lot of people don't really recognize as important is you have to have content market fit. You have to solidify the fact that the content that you're creating is going to hit and resonate with the people you're trying to reach and connect with the people you're trying to, like, essentially influence. When you have that, that's when it makes sense to repurpose content. If you're repurposing trash content, it's not going to do anything for you. Same way that if you're constantly distributing and promoting a product that doesn't have content market fit or a product market fit, you can't promote content that doesn't have content market fit. The content you promote, the content that you distribute has to actually align with the wants and needs of the people on the other end of the keyboard.
And particularly, like, whatever channel that's on, they're specific about what type of content they like. For example, like Reddit,
yeah,
they tend not to like just dropping a link in there. They're like, blah, this is boring. You have to give them the knowledge. And then at the end, you want to find out more, right?
Exactly. 100%. Like, you have to spend the time first to understand the channel that you're going into, right? Like, you can't go into Reddit and just start submitting a bunch of links and think you're going to win. I did that 4 or 5 years ago. I got banned from Reddit. It sucked. I was off. And I like Reddit. Like, Reddit is my jam. That's a channel that I use as a human, not just as a marketer. So when I got banned, like, that hurt my heart. So I had to come back to it and think, okay, what can I do differently? And what I did, and I think I recommend a lot of people do, is you go into the communities that you want to influence, sort the content by top posts. If you go to the top of a subreddit, whatever community it is, you can sort the content by top posts and then start to reverse engineer what I call, like, the Sherlock Homeboy approach, which is when you start to, like, actually dive in and start to research what type of content is trending here. What type of content does this community want? And then you give that content back to them in the format that they're interested in. If you go into the subreddit Futurology, let's say, and you notice that every single top post is about Elon Musk, then you're going to create content that is about Elon Musk and you're going to submit it back to that Futurology content. And I guarantee you it will be fire and people in it are going to respond well to it. That's content market fit.
I love that Sherlock. What did you call it?
The Sherlock Homeboy.
That's such a genius idea. I never thought about that. So by top posts, and then, like, what? Yeah. How do they like the content on this subreddit?
Exactly. And then you use that because you know if this content got the most engagement, if it got the most upvotes, then clearly this is a piece that resonated. And what gets really interesting is the longer that Reddit exists, the longer you're going to have the ability to capture this data. So if a post went viral in 2016 in a subreddit and it's kind of like evergreen content, you can do an updated version in 2025 that is better than that original one, and you submit it back, and guess what? Nobody's going to remember the post from 2017, but they're going to see your piece and they're going to say, wow, look at the value that this brand delivered back to us.
That's the thing with Reddit. There's a lot of reposting, right? Like, people there just reacting the same there thing is. And people don't realize.
They don't even realize it. I think there's a lot to be said for reposting, but there's a lot more value in remixing and then reposting. So if you see a piece that is like 10 great things that every DJ needs to do, and you're in a DJ subreddit, you then repurpose that and you create 20 great things that every DJ needs to do and a free checklist to get started, something like that. So you level up every asset you go into the communities with.
I'm curious how you figure out which subreddit you should even look at. Like, you talked about hustle and grind, like, you know, there's obviously our, you know, subreddit, the coffee subreddit, but, like, how do you find other subreddits?
Yeah. So you have to start by understanding your audience. So for hustle and grind, the typical buyer who's buying, like, posters, coffee mugs, et cetera, that talk about hustle and business are entrepreneurs. So for that community, we went into our entrepreneurs, we went into our small business, our startups, places that entrepreneurs would be spending time. Those were the communities that we kind of tried to seed this content into. The same thing can be done in even SaaS, right? Except you can go into our startup, you can go into SaaS subreddits, but you don't have to be limited to the subreddit world, right? Like, we've reverse engineered things that resonate with folks on Hacker News from the Y Combinator site. And then we create content based off of that insight. And then we show up on the front page. It's not by accident. Like, we had a piece called The Unbundling of Excel. And we noticed that in the Y Combinator, like, Hacker News community, there was a lot of conversations happening about the unbundling of Craigslist. We thought to ourselves, there's also an unbundling happening of things like Excel. Let's create a graph. Let's create a chart just like the original piece that took off probably 5 or 6 years ago, but apply it to Excel. submitted that to the community, made the front page, got tons of traffic, got tons of traction. We ended up getting like 4 or 5 leads out of it. We're able to close multi-thousands of dollars worth of clients out of it as well, which could eventually become $1 million worth of clients, all from reverse engineering and using that Sherlock Homeboy approach, because we know our audience is SaaS entrepreneurs and founders.
I can't get over the Sherlock Homeboy. It's such a good name. It's such a good name. Oh, man. In terms of Reddit, there's also a bunch of trolls. Like, how, right. how right. do you, right. how, you know, I'm sure you posted up something and like, this is the worst. I hate this.
All the time.
How do you respond to it? Do you just ignore it? Like, what is your plan or strategy for that?
Yeah. So I am a big believer in the idea of just killing them with kindness. So when the trolls come in, I come in with the nicest, most Canadian approach that I can give them, where it's like, I'm so thankful that you provided me with this feedback. This will help me kind of rethink about this. Thanks for your time. Appreciate you chiming in. You're amazing. If you're ever in Nova Scotia, please let me know. I'd love to grab a coffee with you. Kill them with kindness. And then they go away. That's really it. And everybody else, the reason why they won't respond to that is because everybody else is watching. And then they're like, oh, I was being a troll. I was being mean. I can't be mean to somebody who's being so nice to me. And then they go on about their lives and troll somebody else.
That's so good. I'm going to do the same. take a look at Reddit and post them up there. The other piece you talked about distribution is reposting stuff up on like LinkedIn as like a LinkedIn article or medium. How long do you wait until you post it up? Like, you know, that's because there might be some impact on SEO.
Yeah. So I think every piece of content, when they're shared on a platform originally, there's this thing called time decay. And time decay is the fact that in the initial like 3 to 4 hours of publishing, you're going to see the maximum amount of engagement on that piece. And then after that, it's going to start to dwindle off and die down. What you want to look for and understand is after about 2 to 3 days, that post is probably getting one like every 4 hours, maybe every 24 hours. And at that point, it's time to republish that as a different asset to give it new life. So on LinkedIn, I typically will share a link to an article that I've developed or I've created, or advise that clients publish their content natively to their site and then on LinkedIn. And then after they start to see that reduction in engagement, that's when we're going to publish it on the author's account as a native LinkedIn article. On Medium, it's a little bit different, because with Medium, you do run the risk of having Medium outrank your website for keywords that you're going after. But what people often underestimate is the fact that Medium has a functionality, if you just do a quick Google search for using a canonical link on Medium, that allows you to import the blog post to medium.com, and then it will automatically say, this is a nofollow link. Do not use this as kind of like the authoritative site. This is the true source. You can do that probably within 2 to 3 days as well. And then once you press publish on these pieces, you let them take on a new life. I think all of that entire strategy of reposting on platforms natively is underestimated. Quora has the functionality of writing full blog posts. LinkedIn has the option to write a full blog post. Medium as well. Even Facebook with notes, you can do a full blog post style on there. When you write those pieces, it's essentially like guest blogging, right? Like, it's essentially the modern equivalent of guest blogging, and you're able to reach a new audience. So I strongly encourage brands to embrace that approach as it gives any content asset that you've developed a little bit more.
When we come back in just a moment, Ross reveals the distribution channel that he is super excited about in 2020 and beyond. I just want to thank the sponsor for this episode, Product-Led Institute. Now, product-led growth is disrupting the way businesses are selling software. It's this exact go-to-market strategy that companies like Slack, Zoom, Dropbox, and HubSpot have used to become industry juggernauts and dominate their markets. Now, you can learn the step-by-step process to apply product-led growth strategy to transform and accelerate the growth of your business. Now, Wes Bush, the author of best-selling book, Product-Led Growth, and we both actually put together 2 new certification programs. And we put these programs together because there's nothing worse than guessing what you need to do to help your users become successful. Like realizing that you should have had a free trial versus a freemium model, or realizing that you shouldn't have been sending new users so many push notifications. I've made these expensive mistakes before, so Wes and I put this certificate program together so you won't have to make the same mistakes that we did. Now, this program is not a lecture-style college course or 100% hands-off self-paced learning program. Along with the program's content, you also get first, live weekly training from Wes and I, second, intimate mastermind group sessions, and third, real-life case studies from expert guest speakers. You can get the full curriculum and details by visiting productled.com/certification or find the link in the description. The deadline to apply is Thursday, September 10th, so make sure to check it out before then. If you're listening to this after that, you can actually apply to be on the wait list. Don't miss out on this. This is a great program that I've created with Wes. Well, enough about this. Let's jump back into my chat with Ross. One other thing that you suggested was using Facebook groups. Is that the Sherlock homeboy approach to work for that as well, for Facebook groups?
100%. So the way that you use the Sherlock homeboy approach when it comes to Facebook groups is you start by, like, again, searching to see what groups are relevant to your audience. So if I'm trying to connect with Raptors fans, I'm going to go to the search bar on Facebook. I'm going to type in Raptors, and then I'm going to click the groups. I'm probably going to see some groups about people who are passionate and super fans of the Toronto Raptors. And I'm going to see some people talking about Velociraptors. Then it's on me to figure out which is my audience, which is my people. I'm not trying to talk to the dinosaur people. I'm trying to talk to the basketball people. So I start to join those groups. When I'm in those groups, I now start to reverse engineer what content generated the most engagement in these communities. If you start to see that one of the most viral pieces of content over the last 12 weeks was this piece that somebody did where they put up an image of Vince Carter and it's showing him in the 90s and just like the evolution and the impact that he had on the Raptors, what does that mean? It means that there's content market fit between the Raptors fans and Vince Carter. Therefore, I'm going to create an infographic talking about Vince Carter. I'm going to create a blog post about Vince Carter. I'm going to create a YouTube video about Vince Carter. That is a topic that resonates. Once I create that content, I'm then going to seed it right back into this community and say, hey, folks, I've been a big fan of this community for the last little bit. I've been a lurker, but here's a piece that I just saw that I think you will enjoy. And then you share your own content. You do this in your own niche as well. There's tons of Facebook groups for everything under the sun, whether you're talking about info security, whether you're talking about computer science, engineering, finance, marketing, math, Baby Shark, you name it. There is a Facebook group for everything. And if your audience is in these groups, there's no better way to get closer to them than to be in them and then learn from them and then give them the content that they want.
You know, with Facebook, do you use your own personal account or do you create like business profile in a sense?
So it's twofold. I think there's a lot of value to having a human do the sharing. Like if you can have a person do the actual distribution in the groups, like they're going to have a higher rate of engagement without certainty. That's just because people connect with people and people on Facebook tend to see their friends and people who they're connected with sharing that content. So ideally, you can have a person on your team or yourself act as a human sharing in these groups. You can have somebody branded as kind of like the brand ambassador for your company, for your brand, et cetera, and they can go into these groups. Facebook has amazing privacy settings now. I know people hate on Facebook and some people are rolling their eyes when I said that, but you can put your account, personal account, on lockdown to a point where nobody in these groups can see who you are, your kids' photos, and what you're doing on the weekend, et cetera. So if you have your Facebook privacy policies set up the way that you should, you can go into these communities, I believe, without any fear. You can, though, another point to keep in mind, and a lot of people don't realize, is that Facebook now offers you as a page to join these groups. So if I have a Facebook page, I can now join these groups as the page, and I can share things and engage as that company. So if I'm trying to connect with SaaS founders and I run a SaaS company, my SaaS company can join that Facebook group. Now, here's the difficulty. Those pages, when they try to join the groups, oftentimes will not be accepted by the moderators because moderators want it to be people. So while this is new functionality, it's not always going to work unless it's an open group and then you can join with your page regardless.
That totally makes sense. Or you can also create a company page with your own brand. Like I noticed a lot of like Russell Brunson and Tim Ferriss, and like they have their Facebook page. That's essentially their name.
Right, exactly. And that's another approach that you can take 100%.
We've talked about, you know, Reddit, Facebook groups. We've talked about Medium and LinkedIn. Are there any other distribution channels that you're like gung-ho on? Like you're like, oh, you know, this is something that not a lot of people are talking about.
For sure. So the one channel that I think in B2B in particular that is underrated and underestimated is Instagram. It's where I'm going to be experimenting a lot more with in the next few months. I've dabbled. I grew a successful B2C brand with Hustle and Grind. Like we have over 100,000 followers. We get sales every day from this channel, but I haven't cracked it in terms of B2B, but I think there's value there. And the reason why I think that is because I'm seeing a lot of finance accounts find success on Instagram. And I think there's an opportunity for B2B as well. We've done some remarketing ads on Instagram for B2B, and it has worked extremely well. We've seen lower cost per click. We've seen higher lead acquisition rates. And the reason why is because people make the mistake of assuming that people are only professional and businessy on LinkedIn and Twitter. That's not real. Like that's not real life. When the same person that walks into the boardroom on Monday and Tuesday and Thursday in the evening is sitting at home on the couch, scrolling through Instagram, looking at their friends. If you can remarket them and you can show them content that is relevant on a channel that is considered B2C and not B2B, you can kind of disrupt their pattern a little bit and get your content in front of them. So Instagram is one that I'm looking at and I'm starting to invest a little bit more in.
We've been talking a lot about content distribution so far, you know, I'm curious, you know, for people like, oh, just got to create content. People will find it. Why is content distribution so important, especially nowadays with all these things happening in the world?
Great question. So we've never been at a point where it's easier to create content. Right? Like right now, it has never been easier to create content. You can create content with your phone. You can create content with your keyboard. Everybody, for the most part, has access to the internet. Anybody listening to this right now could create content. They could take a photo of themselves and share that on Twitter, share that on LinkedIn, share that on Snapchat, TikTok, you name it. In doing so, they are creating noise. And that noise is what every single brand is competing with. So because it is so easy to create, it has never been harder to stand out. When you press publish on a piece of content, everybody thinks that that's the end of the life cycle of that content, but it's not. That's just the beginning because it got published at the same time as thousands and thousands of other pieces of content just like it. So you have to distribute your content if you want to stand out. In addition to that, it's never been a better time to be a creator because more people are using these platforms. More people are using YouTube. More people are using Twitter. More people are using Facebook, etc. Because we have more eyeballs than ever before, we have an amazing opportunity to create value for people and get that value in front of them. And the best way to do that is to distribute your content. So I think that's the fundamental reason why it is so important to distribute your content, because it's never been more competitive for people to create content, and therefore you have more competition and you have more noise that you're up against, but also more people are logged in. More people are waiting for your content if you can add value to their life.
You talk about adding value. How can you also make sure that your content doesn't get lost in the noise? Like, you know, there's a lot. You're right. People can create content as quickly nowadays, but how do you make sure that your content that somebody's creating does get the eyeballs on it?
Yeah. So I think outside of the fact that distribution plays an important role to kind of reach more people, you also want to think about how can we make our content better than what already exists today? So a way in which that you can do this is to kind of always just think about, okay, if this is the bar that has been set, how can we raise it a little bit more and create something just a little bit better? I did this many moons ago, but on SlideShare.com, it was one of the channels that I used to kind of really propel my career forward. When I went on SlideShare, everybody's presentations and decks were pretty much looking the same. They were built in PowerPoint. They were very mediocre. They were using clip art. They were using stock photos. Everything was basic. So what I did was I said, okay, I'm going to actually hire a designer to create the most amazing slides that I can develop. And within weeks, we were able to get millions of people viewing our content because it was different and we leveled up the game in terms of the type of content. And if you continuously do that, where you look at what exists and you try to think, okay, how can we out-innovate what is being done today in this space? I think that's where you get to move the entire industry forward, because you're setting the bar and you're creating something that people are going to be interested in.
I like that. You really invested in creating better content and hiring a designer. One of the things that I think you posted up on LinkedIn, you talked about how a lot of people are investing in top of the funnel content and not enough in like middle or bottom of the funnel content. First of all, why is that? And, you know, can you like just maybe talk about why B2B brands particularly should be thinking about more like middle to the bottom funnel?
For sure. So top of the funnel content is flashy. Top of the funnel content gets you a bunch of high fives and claps and everybody smiles. Top of the funnel content makes your analytics look great. All of those things happen. You get tons of likes, tons of engagement. Everybody feels good when top of funnel content is successful because the volume is so significant. But when it comes to middle of the funnel and bottom of the funnel content, you're reaching less people. You're not reaching as many people with a great case study. Not as many people are looking to look at a landing page where you're comparing yourself with a competitor. Not as many people are looking at jumping on a demo of your product, or even looking at the product details around your product. Like, people don't get that deep at scale. But if you can create that content and make it really, really good, and you can ensure that that content is also distributed consistently, you might not get a bunch of likes, you might not get a bunch of traffic, you might not get a bunch of shares, but what you will get is a bunch of real business results, meaning you'll get leads, you'll get traction in terms of signups, you'll get demos, you'll get people who are asking for calls with your sales team. You will actually move the needle for the business. But for some reason, especially when you get into the C-suite, I find a lot of C-suite executives get so caught up in the buzz and the hype that we see on social media around competitors getting tons of traction, these hacks that resulted in 1,000 visits in 1 minute. None of that matters if you aren't cashing the register, like if the register is not ringing. You need to have content that is moving MQLs through to SQLs and SQLs into demos and demos into customers. Like, you need to have that as a part of your mix. There's no question that top of funnel content is important. There's no question that branding is, in my opinion, one of the most underrated things in SaaS today, right? Like, I believe that. But at the same time, I recognize that marketers very easily get caught up in this idea of chasing the shiny hack and getting this quick spike, instead of looking at how can we as marketers take on our role, which is to be the person right next to sales as the best teammate possible, and give them content that will help them close deals. That's where marketers need to be. And it's a fundamental shift in the way that organizations are culturally built oftentimes. But if you can shift the culture within your organization to be a content first culture, where you view content not only as a place where you can generate traffic, but also as a facilitator for driving a sale, that's when the game changes. And I think that's the key that marketers need to kind of tap into and embrace if they want to have their job long term. There's a reason why CMOs have a 4-year like life cycle with their companies typically. It's because we get so caught up in all of the wrong metrics instead of aligning ourselves with the things that actually will result in an increased valuation for a company, which is business results.
That's so good. You really dropped some truth there.
I appreciate it.
You talked something about...
I did, but I'm probably going to get a lot of people mad at me because of it. No, but I'm okay
I think with it. I think that's the other thing that I find with great content is that it kind of stirs the pot. I think boring like content that like you know everybody's going to agree on, it's going to get lost in the noise. If you say something that like you know people will get pissed off. Like, can you talk a little bit about that? Because you use LinkedIn with that. You post up stuff that sometimes is controversial so that people can react. You're trying to get reactions, right?
Right. Yeah, 100%. I want to get reactions because I think there's a lot of things that people are afraid to say, but that we know them as true, right? Like, there can be something that is said that is true, but also uncomfortable at the same time. And for some reason, we don't like to talk about those things. Like, I put up a post the other day and I was talking about the fact that we oftentimes as content creators get really, really precious about this idea that we need to spend 40, 50 hours to create the perfect blog post. But you don't need to. That makes no sense to me. Like, I think you don't really need to spend 40 to 50 hours to create a great blog post. If you can write a blog post in an hour and a half and it's good, great. That's awesome. That's an amazing thing. we are so precious about this idea of, oh, I need to spend 40 hours to make this pixel perfect, et cetera. No, just ship it, get it out there to the world. Let's see how the world responds to it. Again, you have to create great content, but if you do that, then it takes care of yourself. So I think we, and this is in every industry, I think people in general don't want to speak to the uncomfortable truths. And I think that that's an opportunity for organizations as well. Like, entire industries have been built off of uncomfortable truths. Like, if you look at the rise of chatbots a few years ago, a lot of companies like Intercom, Adrift, et cetera, they built their business off of this idea that they thought that forms sucked. And everybody thought forms sucks. Like, everybody thought, yeah, forms are not the most interesting thing, but nobody talked about it. And then they said, we're going to lean into this. We're going to make it our mantra. We're going to make it our statement. And then they created essentially a new industry based off of it.
That totally makes sense. One other thing that you posted up on LinkedIn that kind of stirred the pot, you're talking about branding, how, you know, a lot of people are, you know, really focused on, you talked about SQL, MQLs, and all the demos, but people forget about branding, right? Why is branding, why shouldn't companies ignore branding?
Yeah, because if you ask anyone to think about the companies that they admire the most, they will all start to envision a brand of some sort. Like, some people listening to this right now just started to envision a brand. They started to picture the Apple logo. They started to picture Microsoft. They started to picture their favorite food. They've started to picture all of these different imagery. And the only way that you can do that and create a sense of that is through consistent branding. But I think, again, oftentimes people play the short game of only looking at what are the metrics that we need to accomplish and achieve in this quarter. What are our OKRs? Like, what are our objectives, key results that we need to hit and knock out of the park right now? And they take their sight off of the fact that the game is long and the game lasts years, sometimes decades, sometimes beyond any of us's lifetime. And if you have that long-term perspective, you will realize and understand the importance of building a brand. And a brand comes from consistency. It comes from having an amazing product, having an amazing service, something that you're delivering. And it comes from being a commitment of actually achieving brand excellence through consistent content and storytelling. Like, that is how Apple has been able to build such a strong brand. They had a great product, sure, but they also told an amazing story 365 days a year, all the way through to the top. And I think that's the key piece that oftentimes is missing.
I want to shift gears one last time and talk about video. It looks like you're a big fan of video right now. You have a YouTube channel. You're posting up like this, this 4x5 videos on LinkedIn as well. Why video? Why should people like look at video and think about video?
Yeah, so I think for me, it all clicked the other year, like probably 3 years ago. I read a lot of books. I'm a huge believer in books. I'm a big fan of written word. I even built my career off of the written word. But then I started to ask myself a question, and it was a fundamental, simple answer, and I got into it very quickly. And it was like, I like books, but most people don't like books. Most people like TV. Most people like YouTube. Most people like watching TV and watching movies. Not everybody's, more people watched Harry Potter than read the books about Harry Potter. Okay, what does that mean? It means people are less interested in written word in compared to video content. So by investing in more video content, I have the ability to reach more people who are interested in video content. It was really that simple. People in general like video content more than written word. It sucks to say because I'm a big reader and I built my career off in the back of written word. But like, the second most popular thing is audio, right? Like, that's why podcasting makes so much sense. We listened as humans, we obsess with TV. Then we follow that up with like podcasts, radio. There's a reason why radio was so important. Followed by like the newspaper, right? Like, newspapers were the first initial medium. And then we found an easier way to consume information, which was radio. And then we found an easier and more enjoyable, which was TV. And TV took off. So video is essentially the ultimate type of content that you can create. And for some reason, I think it's because of the cost for the last few years, people have underinvested in it. But because it's now cheaper than ever before to create and edit a video, and the tools are so much better, anyone can be empowered to do it. I think video is going to have a lasting impact on the way people create and consume content.
Just starting to wrap up, just two last questions. The first one is, you know, if you had one or two pieces of advice for companies about content, or anything else? Like what would be that advice?
So the first one would be for all content marketing or any content approach that you're bringing to the market, you have to start with a real strategy. Like I think there is a strategy that needs to go into content marketing, and that has to be rooted in research. Oftentimes brands just say, okay, I'm going to create content, and they develop a content calendar. The content calendar is just like having a list of ingredients for baking a cake. You still need the recipe. Like, sure, you've got some eggs that are going to go into this bowl. You've got some flour that's going to go into this bowl. You've got some chocolate. That's your content calendar. But what you now need to figure out is what's going to get shaken, what's going to get stirred, what's going to get mixed, et cetera. And that only comes from a recipe. And that is the strategy that you're going to use to create and develop a content system that's going to run smoothly. And then my final piece of advice to companies would be to never underestimate the power of distribution. I think distribution is still the untapped opportunity that exists in content marketing. At Foundation, that's like the bread and butter for what we do. We do content distribution from both an organic and paid standpoint. Primarily in the organic lens with the repurposing and remixing of content. But I think content distribution is so important, especially if you've been at this for a while. Like I feel bad for companies who have created content for the last like 3 years and they've done an excellent job at creating content, but that content doesn't get any traction because it's just sitting on the shelves collecting dust. Take that old content, repurpose it, remix it, redirect it, or remove it from your site, and let that content kind of get new life and actually thrive for you, even 2 years after it's been published.
So good. That's a good place to good to advice that you provided. One final question: you know, if people wanted to connect with you, find out more about your work, where, you know, this is your call to action. Where do you want to send people?
For sure. So the best place to find me would be rawsimmons.com or at The Coolest Cool on Twitter. I'm also on LinkedIn. But honestly, I think the best place would be for folks to just do a quick Google search, Ross Simmons, and then give me a shout on any platform that shows up. I'm always always willing to chat and always open to conversations. And then also check out Foundation. If you're a marketer, you're a brand, and you're really looking to level up your way of thinking on all of the stuff that we've talked about, foundationinc.co is the website where I publish and the team publishes tons of resources to level up your way of thinking as it relates to marketing. So yeah, that's essentially where I would recommend folks go. So thank you for having me on. Really appreciate this chat, and I hope your listeners get a lot of value out of it.
I know they will. I'll also add those links to the description of the show. All right, thanks for us. I really appreciate it.
Take care.
Well, that was it for this episode. Oh man, that was just so good. Like Ross just blew it out of the park with this one. A lot of the things that he advised, I'm actually going to apply for this podcast, and a lot of the other things that I am working on. I just want to remind you to make sure to download that free cheat sheet that I've created for this episode. It's all the actionable tips and insights and step-by-step things that Ross suggested in this episode in a one-page PDF. Why take notes when you can just steal mine? You can take all the lessons, apply it to your business, and accelerate the growth of your company. You can go to growtoday.fm/108 or find the link in the description. You better hurry, because when I publish the next episode next week, I'm going to take away this week's cheat sheet from the website. So make sure to get that now before it goes away. Before I end, I just want to thank the sponsor for this episode. Like I said, this folks help cover the cost of marketing tools and other things so that I can focus on getting amazing experts like Ross on this show. Before we end, this episode is brought to you by productled.com. Now product-led growth is disrupting the way businesses are selling software. It's how companies like Slack, Zoom, Dropbox, and HubSpot have become juggernauts in their industries. Become product-led growth certified in just 6 weeks. Learn more at productled.com/certification or find that link in the description. Please also support me. There's actually three easy ways. Now, first, if you've been enjoying it so far, tell a friend. That's super simple. That's how podcasts grow. You can send an email, share a tweet, or post up something on LinkedIn. I would really appreciate that. Second, you can leave a review on Apple Podcasts, or you can subscribe to your favorite podcasting app. This is how their algorithm works. It's the more people leave reviews, the more people subscribe, the more likely that this show will be found by other marketers like you. And third, please support me on Patreon for as little as $2 per episode for an ad-free experience and other exclusive perks. You get to also support this labor of love for all things marketing. You can check it out at patreon.com/growtoday or find that link in the description. Well, that's it for this episode. Until the next one, this is your host, Ramley John. Keep safe, and as always, keep on growing.